This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
It's Hilary McNevin here on 94.9 FM. Cravings, welcome to a wonderful afternoon of cravings. I'm sitting in here for Pete Dillon, but he is also on the line. And I'd
hey
love...
there!
Yes!
You're taking my show, lady.
Only for an hour, sweetheart. Actually, greetings. And I'll be back in a couple of weeks, but how are you?
Greetings from Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood.
Hello, hello, Pete Dillon. It's lovely to hear your voice. What's happening? What's happening over there?
I feel very John Michael Howson, like I should be doing some sort of entertainment report.
Quick gossip, who have you seen walking up and down the street? Any star spotting?
No, just folks dressed as stars, which is kind of freaky.
Oh, okay. Any chef spotting? Any amazing...
I've been here 24 hours.
Okay.
I have a little jet lag. I spent the afternoon just wandering up and down Hollywood Boulevard, looking at crazy people and taking photos of the pavement.
Okay, it sounds good.
You know, the walk the stars, blah, 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 you walk around.
Yep, I'm with you, So you're doing the touristy stuff.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah, I'm on holiday. Let me tell you about the food here.
Please.
It's big, right? Food is big.
Yes.
I ate a slice of pizza today that was bigger than my head.
Did you finish it?
Yeah.
And did it taste good? That's the thing. Is it quality or is it just quantity?
Yeah, no, it's just grease and cheese and fat.
Nasty.
I also ate this. Everything comes with fries. I had this little, kebab sandwich.
Yes.
Which they call a sandwich. It's what we would call something you eat when you're drunk.
Okay,
and
yes. 3 a.m.
It was chicken and it was marinated in lemon juice and olive oil and cilantro, which we call coriander in the real world. And it's all rolled in this package, like in a pita bread, with fries in it.
Stop. And so double carb overload.
It's served with fries. Man, these people, it is any wonder they're all driving SUVs and pickups because they're huge.
Very, very big or very, very small.
So tell me, what is the news in the food world in Melbourne? Well, is there any?
Well, there is a little. We've got, remember Brown and Doe that opened up in Bridport Street in Albert Park, and then there was a bit of an acrimonious departure from Greg Brown here back in August. They've actually now officially changed the name from Brown and Doe. I Doe. Small I, capital D-O. And,
why is everything starting with a small I? Sorry, Hill. We're going to have a bit of a delay and we're going to bump into another.
Okay.
It's like Vegemite's new food.
But that was... they claimed that was a failure about a week after they did it. So
it's like I snack 2.0. What the hell?
Yeah.
It's food. It's not an accessory you plug into your iPhone.
No, it's not. And this restaurant isn't either, but that's what they've called it. And they're going just down back to strictly Vietnamese dishes. Obviously... they had a bit of a French influence before, but they're just changing their format, pairing things back a bit.
Hey, at the risk of being sued, darling, is is everything that Brown touches turning to stuff lately?
Let's go on to the next question, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, shall we?
Yes. Now, you will be very, very happy to hear this, Pete Dillon. Vudemond has captured another trophy, and they are now won the Restaurant of the Year Award and the Savour Australian National Awards for Excellence. And the annual awards for the Restaurant and Catering Australia were announced in Canberra on Monday.
Yeah.
And Embrasse Restaurant was Best New Restaurant, and Nicholas is coming in today to talk to us.
Fabulous.
Eleanor's at Chateau Yering was the Best Modern Australian Restaurant. And Richmond's, the Grand Hotel, won the Best Pub. So Victoria just scooped. We scooped 14 out of the 35 awards.
Well, you know, and this is the thing, and it's strange that when that other magazine does their awards that we don't raise a mention apart from Shannon Bennett himself.
Can I read you a very wonderful quote quickly from Matteo Pignoletti?
Oh, go mad,
Sydney outlets.
Go mad,
Sydney outlets are a hit with the critics at the moment. And if you could eat the decor, then we could understand all the focus. So I think that was a very good one.
There's a reason I love Matteo.
He's a good man. One more bit of news. Simon Denton's new place has opened. Simon Denton's the owner of Verge on Spring Street. Izakaya Den has opened in the Hero Apartments building down in the basement on the corner of Russell and Little Collins Street in the city.
Nice.
Oh, very nice.
Now, Verge has the beautiful Dallas Cuddy.
Yes.
He is beautiful. And he's a damn fine chef, too.
I have to get that man on this freaking program.
You will, darling. You will, Mr. Dillon.
I'm still getting over Ben Cherry and Pete Evans last week, by the way.
You still? What?
Oh, my God.
No, that was a brilliant show. And next week's looking great. Cravings is turning into a veritable feast.
Next week coming to you from San Francisco.
Oh, that's beautiful. You're good.
Yes, but the city of the filthy homosexuals.
You sound happy, Mr. Dillon. You sound very happy.
Look, you know what? I've got to tell you a funny story. I know this is not about me being on holiday, but I landed about I landed about 28 hours ago.
Yes.
I finally made it to my hotel. I went to this supermarket across the road, and the liquor section in the supermarket is bigger than the rest of the section.
What are they not telling us? I didn't think they drank much over there.
Cheap, lady. I'm telling you.
Really? And enormous bottles too, aren't they? Enormous.
Yeah, I walked into Ralph's supermarket, and for $32 US, I could have bought almost 2 litres in like a handle bottle of vodka.
Oh, for God. But again, I go back to the quantity, not quality.
It's dirty old Smirnoff, it's just the same. But, you know, I went to the wine cabinet just because I went over there earlier because I was a bit dehydrated and needed a refreshment. And sitting there in the wine cabinet in the chiller, apart from the 40,000 types of beer, was in fact a bottle of Absolute vodka.
Oh, wow.
You know, 18 bucks.
Okay. Oh, that's great. So you're having a good time.
Well, the booze is cheap, let me say that.
Yeah, so that...
And no, I've been very good. I'm going out with a friend of a friend's boyfriend or something later tonight.
Yes.
Because it's... hang on, let me tell you what time it is. I know it's 1 o'clock there on Saturday. It's only 7:15 on Friday.
Oh, beautiful. So going out later tonight.
Yes, going out. Checking out some bars in and around Hollywood. Yep. Anyway, I've got to finish telling you this story. So at the supermarket, I bought... 1/4 pound of mac cheese.
Yes.
I've got.
You've got people to talk to too, Dillon. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I know. They'll wait. I bought some fried chicken. Maybe.
Yes.
And I sat in my hotel room because I was so freaking tired. And ate mac cheese and fried chicken with a bottle of California Zinfandel.
How, that's it. That's well. The Zinfandel's civilized, and the mac cheese is beautifully parochial. Well done, Dillon.
Well, I've got
regional eating, regional dining, that's what that's called.
Now, who are we talking to first?
The one and only Jill Duplay.
Now, are we going to be able to talk to Jill because I'm on the phone, or do I have to get the hell out of this hotel room?
No, we're not. One second, we don't think we can put you both on at the same time.
Hey, well, you know what? I know Lisa's there behind the panel. Hi, yes. Lisa. And she's going to be really well behaved. I know you're going to play some tunes. I know you're going to talk to Jill. Who else are you talking to, love?
Jane Faulkner, the wine writer, who's also doing some work for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. And that's why we're talking to Jill. And then Nicholas Pola is coming in and going to talk to us about his great restaurant and what he's doing. Well, he's just won Best New Restaurant in Australia. So we're very proud of him and happy for him.
Excellent. Well, listen, I know you've got pervy French goodness coming in, and I know there's ladies waiting on the phone to talk to you.
Yes.
So I'm going to throw on some Lippy and a brooch, and I'm going to leave you to it. Are you comfortable with that?
I am. Well, I'm about to talk to you, one of the creative directors of the Food and Wine Festival. I am very happy.
Well, give both Jill and Jane a big slurpee for me, because I know them both terribly well. Brooch. And I don't know Nicholas at all, but touch his bum, will you?
Oh, sweetheart, I'm married.
And welcome back to Cravings. And Pete, wherever you are, I hope you're having a great time. Thanks for calling in to say hi. Now, our first guest today is one of Australia's best known and respected food writers. And this year, she's one of the 4 creative directors for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival that will be on, not this year, well, for March next year. Jill Duplay is the creative director global and has been instrumental in the development of the gastronomy program for the festival and in bringing some of the world's trailblazing chefs to the Langham Melbourne for the masterclass in 2010. Jill Duplay, welcome to Cravings.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. It really is.
Would have been great to have Pete too. You're going to have to get another phone line, you guys.
What do you think? I think we have to get it sorted. He was devastated. Did you hear him?
I know, but it's good to see he's being such a great ambassador for our great love of really good food and wine. Yes. What was that? Mac cheese in the hotel room?
And with Zinfandel, California Zinfandel.
Oh, actually, that's okay. That's very on trend at the moment.
Yeah.
He's doing well. Now, we've been looking at the Fest Gastronomy Edition for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. It's just been released.
And I hope you're hungry.
Oh, I am ravenous from just reading it.
I know. We've got such good people coming.
Yes.
It's always such a buzz anyway, everyone getting together and amazing chefs from around the world. But actually, I think the real legacy is what it does for us and our chefs and the whole exchange of ideas. It's just a beautiful time.
It is a wonderful time. And getting the chefs were you the one that went out there on the ground and actually got all of these chefs in?
Yeah, my job's really hard.
Yeah, it sounds hellish. Go on.
I am forced to go around the world and meet. I guess the main thing is just trying to work out what is happening in the world of food that, you know, because there's a lot of people doing a lot of different things. But if you can actually sort of nail what is going to be happening in the next couple of years, then that's when it gets exciting.
Go on.
I was lucky enough to go to a festival in Copenhagen that celebrated raw low energy cooking with some of the great chefs of the world, and I learnt a hell of a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just showed me that the world of gastronomy, you know, at a fine dining level, has been dominated by technique and beautiful advanced equipment and spherification and all sorts of amazing sort of boys' toys for several years. And it's just been a complete cultural, mental, emotional shift.
Mm-hmm.
And now, thank the Lord, the great chefs around the world and here in Melbourne are looking at earth, nature, flowers, flavour,
mm-hmm.
natural flavour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, using the equipment, the technology to give us more flavour,
mm-hmm.
but only for the flavour-driven reasons. And that's just such a beautiful thing to celebrate.
And do you think, and is a lot of the focus on actually where they are? You know, and what by that I mean is their gardening, it's local. And
it
the focus is
be.
On, yes,
I
exactly.
Mean, I think, I mean, I grew up thinking that the word terroir was only to do with wine.
Yes.
That it was that sense of place and that you could taste, capture in the wine.
Yes.
It's not, of course. It's a food term as
yeah,
well.
It's a broad term, isn't it?
Yeah. And if we, I mean, in our own way, we can have our own little terroir for dinner by picking our herbs and everything. But this is what is, okay, there's the zeitgeist of each chef celebrating their own terroir.
Yes.
And that's what makes everything so different.
Exactly.
Which is fantastic.
Well, I was looking at two chefs, if I may bring up a couple of names that you're bringing over. David Chang is getting a lot of press, but looks fascinating. And on the other side of the US, we've got David Kinch, who they seem to be, one is, as you say, zeitgeist and doing his own thing. They're both definitely doing their own things.
They're two of the hottest chefs in the States and approaching food in a very, very different way.
Yes, and how would you describe that? How is David Chang?
David Chang is your sort of total New Yorker. He's a Korean-American. He's young. He has won two Michelin stars, so he is regarded up there with the more traditional chefs.
Yes.
But he's just a sort of a up-you sort of chef, basically. I mean, he's...
He sounds fantastic, I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, he's just brought out... he has three or four restaurants under the name of Momofuku.
Mm-hmm.
That can be pronounced in various different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just brought out the Momofuku cookbook, and I was laughing yesterday. I saw him... A typical signature, you know, every chef's asked to sign his cookbook. This one, he just wrote... Momofuku overrated, David Chang. and his co-author wrote, Momofuku overpriced. And I just think that shows you the attitude, and that's what he does with food.
Yes.
And I was there last year, and I thought, I love this place. It's got that buzz of a great Melbourne sort of wine bar, bistro.
Yes.
Kids behind the bar, polishing glasses, beautiful wine list on hand.
Is it quite a small room? Is it quite intimate?
It's buzzy, and there's no booking, so there's a queue at the front from 5 o'clock in the afternoon every single night.
Oh, wow.
And he, being Korean-American, he just does... Korean and American, and he doesn't force them together, so there's platters of Kentucky ham on the bar, and there's beautiful, beautiful little craving material steamed white buns with really slow-cooked pork belly inside and hoisin sauce and kimchi, you know, that Korean chili fermented cabbage. Oh, my God.
Like nothing you've ever tried.
So that is, and that's what he is just pushing that. He's just doing his own thing. He doesn't like to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Whereas on the other side of America, you've got David Kinch at Manresa. Mm-hmm. Again, two Michelin stars, completely the opposite approach. Mm-hmm. Everything that comes into his kitchen comes from the Love Apple Farm a couple of miles away, where Cynthia, who's best mate, grows everything for him.
Yes.
Tiny little flowers, herbs, everything edible that you can do. And he just says this is his inspiration, just comes from them. He doesn't know what he's going to be cooking until he sees what's been growing.
It's extraordinary. But they're both
beautiful.
They obviously take their work seriously, but not themselves almost. There sounds like there's a sense of fun, definitely, with David Chang you don't often see with chefs, I have to be honest.
Well,
we're not used to seeing that with chefs.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I heard someone say the other day, is he going to be the last celebrity chef in the world? Because we're a bit over that, we've got to worship at their kneecaps.
Yes, and the term celebrity with chef is often quite misused, I think.
Yeah, well, exactly, and which... You can have personality chefs, you can have famous chefs, famous for their talent, for their whatever, and then you can have chefs who go on TV.
Yes.
I know which one I'd rather eat at.
The one in the kitchen?
Yep.
Yeah. I hear. Completely agree. Yeah, it's true. And David Kinch has obviously got the same, similar reputation in that he is as famous. Did they both work in Michelin restaurants in Europe, or?
Well, Dave Chang is a bit more of a iconoclast. So no, he's just done it his own way. But Kinch had a more traditional French train. Upbringing and all through Europe, and then takes it home, you know. But that's the California thing too, isn't it? That you are more connected with. I'm not saying it's a hippy zippy thing. Just saying they are more aware of what's growing around them, and their own sort of culture as well is very linked to the country.
And these two chefs and a myriad of other amazing, talented chefs are coming to perform or give masterclasses, correct?
Yeah, the beautiful masterclass weekend, which I think is fabulous best weekend in the entire Melbourne calendar for the year.
Yes,
21st of March, and that's sort of snug in the actual Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, which runs from the 12th to the 23rd.
Yes,
but it's just a buzz at the Langham as chefs and food writers, providors. Lots of home cooks just keen to see what's going on in the world of food, mm-hmm. pick up on these sort of, have a bit of a giggle, come out for a coffee. I love how everyone turns up every morning going, I have a coffee, I want the coffee. And then we actually start talking round about morning tea time.
Yeah, it sounds very civilised.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, what's civilised is you're not just learning, listening, talking. You are actually tasting what they do. It's one of the few food festivals in the world where you're not just seeing people cook and demonstrate for you. You're actually getting amazing tastings from really top chefs in the kitchen at the Langham coming out. So that, you know, it's the proof of the pudding. We can all sit up here and talk. But like, okay, come on, how good are you? I want to taste it.
It's perfect. And after all your travels and getting these chefs, where does Melbourne sit? So you in international terms.
When I've been living overseas in London for a few years, and I've always described Melbourne, my hometown, as, you know how every country in the world has one city that's like the food city, the stomach of the country?
Yes.
And
yes.
I say, that's Melbourne.
Yes.
And they go, oh, I get it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we all think, oh, Paris is the be-all and end-all of France. No, in fact, the Melbourne equivalent in France is Lyon.
Yes.
It's the older, traditional keeper of the virtues of food, mm-hmm. Surrounded by wine, beautiful wine-growing areas. So, you know, that's why with Masterclass and with the Food and Wine Festival in Melbourne, we have to have wine as so much a part of the story. We can't eat without drinking.
No, well, it's...
Or drink without eating.
It's true. It's the truth. And they marry each other so beautifully. Well, they're meant to be together. You can't have one without the other.
Exactly. And so we can update on food, but also as part of the wine program. So you've got someone like Nick Stock, who's, you know, belongs to that wonderful tradition of Australian sommelier, surfer, you know, loudmouth.
Yes, wonderfully Australian.
Wine. And he's just got a session that says, okay, if you want to know what's hot in wine, here and overseas, this is a session you come to. And so, you know, and then you're stocked up, aren't you, so to speak, because you know exactly what to drink, what to say, how to, you know, where you're going.
And where can our listeners basically get tickets? How do we get to the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival next year?
Well, not everything is on sale yet. The masterclass is.
Yes.
But just go to melbournefoodandwine.com.au a lot of it's on sale now. Check out that website, but the full program goes on sale 8th of December.
And then things
are all, you know, available through Ticketmaster. I'm now sounding like Pete Dillon.
But the longest
lunch. And John Michael Housen.
That was perfect. He will become John Michael one day. He will be our generation's John Michael.
It's in the genes, I reckon. And in the genes.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Jill Duplay, thank you so much for being with us today on Cravings. And we look forward to seeing you next year at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival.
Absolutely. Now everyone has to actually race out and have lunch because we're all so hungry.
I'll see you there.
Yeah, brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a lovely day.
Thanks.
Bye.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to Cravings this afternoon here on Joy FM. And our next guest is a regular contributor to The Age and also to Gourmet Traveller Wine Magazine. She's a great wine judge and an educator. And I have to say, Jane Faulkner has the talent of turning the often complex world of wine into a very approachable subject for all. So, Jane Faulkner, welcome to Cravings.
Hilary McNevin, it's my pleasure because I love drinking is actually the point of all of that intro.
And that's why we're friends.
Indeed we are.
But how are you?
I'm very well.
Are you in the Yarra Valley?
I'm in the gorgeous Yarra Valley. I'm looking out to the vineyards here, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm actually hosting a lunch, not right now because I'm talking to you, at Oak Ridge Estate, and we've just had a flight of Chardonnay, stunning, just gorgeous.
Really? Mm. What vintages were you looking at?
We were looking at 08, current one, and the 06, just back to back, from different vineyards, and just gorgeous. The winemaker here, Dave Bicknell, I just like to drink his stuff. He knows how to make it, and I drink it's gorgeous.
Beautiful. Chardonnay is actually, I guess, it's not as big and ballsy as it used to be, is it? Not
and
as
thank
buttery.
Goodness for that.
I couldn't agree with you more.
No, there's a fineness really getting back into Chardonnay, and I think that's a really good move. Chardonnay is sort of one of those grape varieties that you can, the winemaker has a lot of influence on. Mm-hmm. So fortunately these winemakers now are pulling back and making them much finer with a real flinty notes often, complex but not heavy.
Yes.
Makes them perfect to drink on their own or with food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes them more food friendly, I think.
Absolutely.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what it's about. I mean, Aussies tend to love a glass on, you know, of anything actually on their own, as in the wine on its own. But the thing about food and wine, I mean, you were talking about this earlier, it's the combo that we love. So, I mean, I can't think, it's incomprehensible actually, of having a meal without a wine. Maybe other than breakfast, except, mind you, I've had Moscato at breakfast and that always works.
Oh, that would be beautiful. That would, how could it not work?
I know, exactly. With a bit of panettone.
Oh, that's beautiful Christmas morning breakfast. Yes. You've just given me a great idea.
Yeah, just do it every Saturday. Yeah.
But now look, I was talking to Jill Duplay about the festival program, the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival program.
Indeed.
And Jane, you're on the cover standing on a plate with a lot of other chefs.
What a silly thing for me to do. What was I thinking of that
You look
that
very
day?
Happy and you have a glass of wine in your hand.
Yes, because it's actually a Barbaresco. Oh no, it's a Barolo. That's why I was so happy.
Can you tell us all who are interested in wine and may not know, what is a Barolo?
A Barolo is from the region of Barolo in Piedmont, and it's actually the grape variety is Nebbiolo, but this particular one is from Vira, a very, very fabulous producer, and the young son, who's all of 24, is actually coming out for the festival next year. And, I mean, if he can't get you excited about Nebbiolo, then the other person joining him is Chiara Boschi.
Ah, yes.
And she's a beautiful winemaker. winemaker as well. Different, completely different styles, but great expressions of what Nebbiolo can, should be, and just what you prefer, I guess.
And so are they both, are they in the same region in Italy?
Yes, they are. Yep, they're just, they're neighbours, basically.
But their wines taste very different, would you say?
Yeah. Look, I guess the thing particularly about Piedmont, or the two most famous areas, Barbaresco and Barolo, mm-hmm. separated by, I don't know, 30 Ks, mm-hmm. Where Nebbiolo really is the king there. The thing is, they really are very interested in vineyard sites as well. So apart from saying, well, here's Barolo, we make Nebbiolo, but they're actually looking at the particular detail and nuances you get from these vineyards. Chiara has a wine from probably my favourite vineyard called Canubi, mm-hmm. and that wine for me, just, it's so perfumed and aromatic. It's a very heady wine, and Nebbiolo, the thing about Nebbiolo, it might be beautifully aromatic, but it's got extremely powerful tannins.
Yes.
And if you haven't had that before, it can be a wee bit confronting, but you know, you will get used to it.
you'll make yourself get used to it.
Yes.
And so does it age well if it's got good tannins?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about Nebbiolo, it has the capacity to age just like Grand Cru Burgundy.
Wow.
20, 30, 40 years. I think the oldest Barolo I've ever had was from the late 50s.
Wow.
But 1961, which was a fabulous vintage,
yes.
in that region, and I had a Barolo from 61, and you just would not be able to pick it. It was so incredibly young and fresh, so amazing capacity. However, mm-hmm. there are some producers now trying to make it a bit more approachable, because they understand that, you know, we might not all be around in 20 years' time.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing that for my benefit, actually. And
thoughtful.
Yes, indeed.
This one's for
so thoughtful.
Quick, put it away. What would you describe Nebbiolo grape? I know, like, Australian winemakers are making Nebbiolo now, but if someone hasn't tried or had Nebbiolo as a wine, what's it, anything well-known in Australia it tastes like? Can you compare it to anything?
No,
or not really.
It's a really hard one, because generally not. But I guess the thing is, if I were to give a description of it, first of all, Nebbiolo in the glass can look like a rusty bucket. It can
wow.
actually look incredibly deep and garnet in colour. Colour
yes.
is no indication of quality,
yes.
unless it's brown, and then you know it's oxidised and it's had its day. But
yes.
really, they can be quite orange or quite deep red. But there's this amazing perfume we often call tar and roses.
Uh-huh.
There can be tobacco notes, cedary stuff, all the waffling winemaker nonsense that we writers like to put in a wine. It basically is Nebbiolo, but it's just got this amazing structure from those tannins. And when those tannins soften over time, you know, beautiful, mellow, just very enticing wine. If you've never had it before and you're going to try an Italian one,
yes.
you know, speak to your independent retailer, say, look, I want to try this. I heard someone rabbiting on about it.
Mm-hmm.
But also have it with food. Don't have it on its own if you're not used to it, because it can be like, ooh, boy, I can't drink that. It's too hard.
And when you say food, would you say a meat or
yes.
a cheese, piece
yes.
of cheese?
Cheese.
No?
Cheese and red wine often don't work.
Yes.
So it needs a robust dish.
Yes.
Some pasta with ragu, some base of tomato.
Yes, lots of garlic, kind of thing.
All of that kind of thing.
Yep.
And any kind of, red meat is so good. And if you're vegetarian, then make sure you've got a really robust tomato-based kind of sauce that
yes.
you've got some, herbs or whatever you prefer, maybe some beans. In that, that's okay, but something strong enough and robust enough to handle it,
mm-hmm.
and you should be a convert probably by the end of dinner.
And well, that's perfect, Ellen. Yeah, you don't just write tasting notes for wine, do you? Now, I have a message here. It says Pete Dillon is online in LA and listening, and I have a question for you, Jane. Why has it taken so long to talk to Jane Faulkner on my show when I am not there? !! Will she come on when I get back from the land that taste forgot?
Well,
please.
Yes, well, he will go to LA when I'm
yeah.
around.
Yeah.
That's a deal. I'm only sorry I couldn't come in to sit opposite you in the studio today, but I will come back in, and he just forgot to ring me, clearly. I'm very
That's
offended.
We'll sort that out when he gets back. And you'll be at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival next year, won't you?
I certainly will be.
In some masterclasses,
yep.
things like that.
Yes.
Well, we look forward to seeing you.
I look forward to then, being there.
And thank you, Jane Faulkner. You better get back to your flights of Chardonnay.
Yes, we've probably moved on to Pinot now. So.
Life's hell, I tell you.
So look, come along to the festival. Those who are a bit scared about wine, there is actually one of the events I'm involved in, if I've got 1 second to say this.
Please do.
Or 10. It's called the Wine Retreat. So what they're doing is they're having the so-called traditional masterclasses, which will be fabulous. Mm-hmm. And all those groovy people from Barbaresco and Barolo talking about Nebbiolo will be there. They're called the Babes of Barolo and Barbaresco.
Fantastic.
They're fabulous people. Mm-hmm. But the retreat's a bit more casual, where you can pop in, sit down, sit around and talk about wine in a very informal, relaxed manner. Because sometimes people look at a program and go, oh, I'd love to go to that, but oh, it's too serious, or I don't know anything about wine. Don't be scared, come along. You know, just come along.
Perfect.
And I'll be there, and I love a natter.
Really?
Yes.
I don't believe you. We will. It's beautiful, Dylan. Thank you so much for coming.
It's
and we'll
pleasure.
Get people there to try wine. They need, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll be doing it. You take care now, Dylan.
You too, darling.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I think Mr. Dylan's back on the line. Are you there, darling? Hello. Hello,
hey,
hello.
Listen.
Yes.
You're doing too good a job at my job.
I do love
a
chat.
I've been sitting here listening and I'm like, uh-oh, she's taken over my job.
No, I wouldn't do that, darling, as long as you buy me a glass of champagne every now and again, keep me quiet, put me in a corner.
There'll be a bottle for you, and it will be a bottle of something French.
Ah, we will, yeah, that's just around the corner with a blue label, isn't it?
Actually, it's Blue Top. It launches in Australia first week of November.
Beautiful. Look forward to it.
Next week when Amanda is sitting in the chair for me,
yes,
who is co-hosting, as I call in from San Francisco, she's going to have the Managing Director of Rankin Pommery Australia with her.
Great. Well, that'll be a great show next week.
She's also going to have the very gorgeous David Thompson from... who is known as the God of Thai Food. Strange for an Australian boy, but there you go.
Yes. Yes, his new book is brilliant. But I have another chef here sitting right next to me who wants to talk to
you. I know, this is the one I wanted you to touch inappropriately.
Yeah. He's married, I'm married. It's just not on.
Hello, good afternoon, Peter. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Welcome to Cravings.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I feel a bit cheeky that I'm not there, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I heard you're having quite a bit of fun over there.
Yeah, a little bit. Hey, mate, first of all, congratulations on being the Young Chef of the Year with the Age Good Food Guide. For those that don't know, Nicholas was back in... Hillary, what month?
It was August.
August. Announced as the Young Chef of the Year. Previous winners have gone on to do great things. Adam De Silva, props to mine. He's... currently chefing at, or part owner and chef at Coda, mm-hmm. Which is one of my favourite little haunts.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant place. Mm. But Nicholas owns Embrace on Drummond Street.
You've also just been awarded another award. Tell us about that.
Yeah, everything happened really fast for us. We've only been open since February this year, but we went through a few awards and... Young Chef of the Year Award was a really, really nice recognition, and we just got Best New Restaurant, National Best New Restaurant from Restaurant Catering Association. So that's really, really nice, and very nice recognition as well, you know.
Yeah, and, this is a national award, yeah?
Yes, it is, yes.
For somebody that opened in February, how do you get to this point so quickly?
We don't really know. Honestly, we don't try. I just want to be honest. What we're doing at Embrace is really personal, front or back of house. The food is really personal. The approach to our customer is really personal, and I think that's what people realize is a little difference. And we don't chase the award. We just own a restaurant. We just want to cook and owning our restaurant. That's all we want to do. But those awards keep coming, and it's a really, really nice recognition. But it's not only for the last eight months. It's for the last. I've been a chef for nearly 16 years now, and I've been with my wife for 10 years. So it's a long road, it's really nice. It's a really nice feeling.
Nicholas, might I just say that you're the most humble Frenchman that I've ever met in my life.
There aren't very many out there. You're one of them.
No, they're not. Sorry, Neil, I'm jumping in. I know you have stuff prepared.
No, please. Chat away. It's great. It's very exciting.
What's next? I mean, one of the questions I asked a few of my guests last week, one of which was Ben Shuri, the other Pete Evans, are you going to get to a point, Nicholas, where you become, at the risk of sounding vulgar, a brand? Are you going to end up with 3 or 4 restaurants, 3 cookbooks, a TV show?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I've got the time to do that.
Become an action figure.
I was taking the mick out of Luke Mangan, who I know and love dearly. But, you know, Nick Mangan is in himself an industry. He's no longer... And there's nothing wrong with being just a chef. As Ben Shuri said, he's very careful about the exposure he gives himself. I just wonder, at what point, when you are doing so well, the offers start coming, you accept them, and then all of a sudden it becomes Nicolas Pollard, the brand?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, it's something really hard, you know, like, that's what... Jill was saying just before, you know, like people prefer to go in a restaurant where they know the chef is in the kitchen, you know. And when you go to a place and, you know, the chef is not here, it doesn't have the personality. It's got his name on the door, but it doesn't have the personality into the food. And that's why we open a restaurant, you know. We want to be personal with what we do. You know, it's a choice. Do you want to make money or do you want to be happy and follow your dreams? Basically, our dreams was to have a restaurant, and that's what we have, and we're happy with what we have, and now it's hopefully, you know, having a big and nice family.
Oh,
but don't you want both? Don't you want to earn money and be a chef?
Everybody wants money, you know, but it's nice. It's nice to have money, but, you know, I don't have much money, but hopefully one day. But you know, until we can survive. We just want to be happy. I want to be happy.
Mm. Yeah. And you are at the moment? Are you working ridiculously long hours?
Yeah. It's a long days, but, yes. You know, we're really lucky as well. We have a good team behind us,
yes.
Back or front of us. And you know, it wasn't really easy. Like, it was, we have, all of our staff been here since probably day one. And, you know, and but it's, you know, now making a name for ourselves, we can actually... We've been approached from some good people who want to work for us, because, mm-hmm. you know, at the beginning it's really hard when people don't have the picture, doesn't really know what you want to do, what you want to achieve.
Yes.
It's really hard to get some good stuff.
Mm.
And you know, also following all those awards, and, you know, people come to us with really high expectation now, and it's, you know, one is 8 months old, we're still a really, really young baby. And, you know, we have done a lot of mistakes on the way. We're still doing mistakes, but we're learning from it. And hopefully, you know, in 10 years, I hope. So,
I would do it considerably less. Hill, you're the wife of a restaurateur who does work ridiculous hours.
Yes.
For those that don't know, Hillary's husband is Morris Esposito from Esposito's in North Carlton. I guess the question for me is, and this is probably a question to you, Hill.
Yeah.
Could you give Nicholas some advice?
On how to cope? hours?
No, it's more about, you know, he's talked about his wife. I don't know whether Nicholas has kids or not. But how do you sort of set a balance between work and life, between a business and trying to maintain your marriage and your relationship with kids?
I think it's really important to be aware that when you do start a restaurant, I think Nicholas would agree with me, you do have to surrender pretty much most of your life for the first year or two, which Morris has done, and we balance it out by, he's closed on Sundays, that's our day, we go in there once or twice a week for dinner, and that's, you know, instead of mum cooking at home, that's the kids get and have a family dinner there. So that's sort of, we have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and that becomes our culture. And they have very simple things that you would cook at home, you know, grilled meat and vegetables or pasta. And so it's about trying to communicate. It's different. It's not a way a conventional couple, whatever that means anymore, anyway, operates or works. It's about not being aware of the fact that you're setting up and establishing something, like Nicholas was saying, that you hope down the track it becomes financially rewarding, but also emotionally rewarding as well.
Sure, Nicholas, I'm going to just one more question before I log off and leave you with Hillary. I know there's only a couple of minutes left in the program. It goes very quickly, let me tell you. What's next? I mean, it's been 8 months. You're reaping rewards as far as awards go.
It's just basically.
What's the plan, basically?
There's no plan. There's a bit of a plan, but it's no big plan. It's basically keep doing what we're doing and try to keep looking also after the garden. Like we have our own garden at home, and that's a lot of work. We close every Mondays and Tuesdays. We open from Wednesday to Sunday, and Monday Tuesdays it's made to be our days off, but on the Mondays it's garden day.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesdays is a market day, so I go in the market every Tuesday to get a veg for the restaurant, and at least I can pick my own and see what I buy and that kind of stuff. But it's making sure the garden is in good shape. And
What you grow in your garden in the restaurant?
Yeah, we use all the herbs and flowers we use in the restaurant are from the garden. And
Peter, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We're going to have to wrap it up, darling. We're going to have to. Son of so.
All right, well, Nicholas, thank you first of all for joining us. Hill, thank you for doing such a sterling job.
It's my
pleasure. You'll hear Hillary again in 2 weeks when she's completely me, where I can't dial in from somewhere and be like an annoying little person. Next week, you'll meet David Thompson, Amanda Pritchard sitting in the chair. You'll meet the Managing Director of Rank and Pomeroy Australia. And quite possibly, there may be a bit of Merck and Mora action in this studio as well, particular reason. I'll leave it with you to close up. I've got to go. There's something fabulous and cute walking past my door.
Quick, right. Run! Bye!
Bye!
Bye. See you, darling. Right, Nicholas, thank you so much.
That's okay.
For
thank
coming
you very
in.
Much for having
and
me.
We look forward to coming and dining. Nicholas Embrus, Embrasse.
Yes.
In Drummond Street in Carlton. You'd be crazy not to go. It's beautiful.
Thank you very
much. Okay, thanks. See you soon.
Thank you.
Congratulations again, by the way.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.